Hi, welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you here with us. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy or follow Golf News Net on Twitter, a little easier to spell, at Golf News Net. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, and find all of our stuff on thegolfnewsnet.com, where we are offering a new membership model called GNM Plus, which for $30 a year or $3 a month gives you an ad-free experience and access to all of our content, including exclusive GNM Plus content, which includes in-depth fantasy research, equipment testing results from TrackMan or Launch Monitor, as well day early access to this podcast on our website for members only, and access to special giveaways and contests. And that's all available on our website, thegolfnewsnet.com. Head over to the menu and check out GNM Plus for our plans and to sign up. So we're recording our podcast this week a little bit later than we typically do. We normally do this around noontime, and it's around 3:30 Eastern on Wednesday afternoon. And if you know where I'm going with this, you know that we've had some pretty significant news announced, or at least it's termed that way by the PGA of America, from the RSM Classic, where Davis Love III is the de facto host of that tournament on St. Simon's Island at Sea Island Resort. He also happens to be the 2016 U.S. Ryder Cup captain, and he took some time this afternoon to announce a couple of things. One, that there will be an ungodly number of assistant captains now allowed next fall at the Ryder Cup in Minnesota, Hazeltine National. They will bump it up from 4 to 5 captains, which I don't know why you need that, but fine. They've agreed to do that, so everybody gets a radio. Everyone gets a cart who gets that role. And he also announced 3 additional assistant captains to join Tom Lehman, who's a Minnesota native and makes sense to be on the team as an assistant captain because he is buddies with DL3 and obviously a hometown hero to kind of rev up the crowd a little bit. So rah-rah for that. And Love announced 3 people would be his assistant captains making out the team, leaving one open spot. But those 3 guys are Tiger Woods, Jim Furyk, and Steve Stricker. And I thought that was a little bit surprising. I wouldn't necessarily call it significant, but it is surprising because Love is getting out in front of this almost a year ahead of time, 10 months ahead of time, to tell the world who his assistant captains will be. He's letting the potential players on this team know who the assistants will be. And in Love's expression, trying to send a message to those guys that the U.S. side and a lot of these guys were big players in the task force that the PGA of America created after the humiliating defeat of 2014 at Glen Eagles, that this group of people, this core of people, is very committed to winning a Ryder Cup and doing it in 2016, and that they're going to do whatever it takes to support whoever's on the team, including themselves if they make the team, because Love said that all these guys, including Tom Lehman, have the opportunity to make the team on points or even as a captain's pick, and that if they do, they may not necessarily maintain the role of assistant captain, although Love said that Woods said that he would like to be a playing assistant captain, that he would like to make the team on points and then, or as a captain's pick, I guess, and then be that assistant captain in that capacity. That seems incredibly unlikely for Woods. He's undergone 2 surgeries in the last 2 months, 1 a microdiscectomy procedure, a 2nd in 18 months, and then a follow-up procedure to clean up some of what was done in that procedure. So that seems pretty unlikely for him to come back any time before the summer of 2016. And if that's the case, then he has a very limited window to make the team. And that's probably not just not going to happen. So why not name him to the team now? Furyk, on the other hand, has a very good chance to make the team. It seems pretty likely that he would make the team. He had to pull out of the President's Cup in October. Even though he was on the team, he had an injury to his wrist, so it forced him to pull out and got J.B. Holmes onto the team, but he seems a likely candidate to make it. Steve Stricker is semi-retired, doesn't play very often, and will have to have a tremendous run to make the team. He seems unlikely, but at least he'll give it a crack. And so will Davis Love III, who, if you have to be reminded, won on the PGA Tour last season. He's a 51-year-old man, and he won the Wyndham Championship. So it's not to put it out there that he can't make the team. I mean, he could. Obviously, he's got a big grind to do it. So does do any of these guys that if they want to make the team, but it is possible. And so Love opened the door to say that if any of these guys make the team, either as a captain's pick or on their own, then they're probably going to have to open up that slot and put someone else in there in that assistant captain's role. And that's even put forward knowing that Woods wants to be a playing assistant captain. So there was a question follow-up, a very good one, I thought, asking why Phil Mickelson wasn't named as an assistant captain to the team. And Love said he was considered, but that based on his performance at the President's Cup, which Love saw firsthand as an assistant captain to his buddy Jay Haas in South Korea, that Mickelson feels he is ready to make the team on points, that he is ready to contribute as a player primarily and not as an assistant captain. And so that's where his focus is going to be, and that's what his express purpose is going to be in 2016. And we'll see where he comes out on the other side of swing changes and alterations that he's making with Andrew Jetson after he let go Butch Harmon as his swing instructor earlier in the fall. And we'll see where that takes him. And if he makes the team on points, great. And I think there's a reasonable chance that he could be a captain's pick too, especially considering how he performed as a captain's pick for the first time ever in his career at the President's Cup. He seemed like he was the guy that loosened things up to a degree that really made it easier for the Americans to perform. He was a lightning rod. He took a lot of criticism. He offered some criticism of the international players. And I think that was something he was kind of practicing for the Ryder Cup. So I think that was a bit of an expression of where he intends to be and what he intends to do next year at Hazeltine, trying to kind of drum up support and get some controversy started and make the guys think that it's okay to talk a little bit of smack, even though they haven't won the Ryder Cup very much in the last 25 years, and to see where this takes them. And I'm interested in this. I'm intrigued by it. But ultimately, these guys are still not locked into that role. Obviously, there's a good chance they're going to be in that role, just given where they're at in terms of their careers or their health or both. But I do think it does send an interesting signal. I mean, it is that these guys were very actively involved in the Ryder Cup either the last time around, because Stricker was an assistant captain to Tom Watson. Furyk has been on the team basically for the last 20 years, just like Phil Mickelson. Woods obviously has been a part of the task force and seems very excited about the prospect of being an assistant captain, seeing as though there have been three or four different times where it's been said, either from Love or Woods himself or Woods' surrogates in the media, like Noda Begay III, that he wants to be an assistant captain. He wants to try this. And I find that absolutely fascinating, and we'll see where that leads. But I also know that this job is not necessarily one where you have a tremendous impact on what ultimately happens. Obviously, you can give some advice. You can have guys having five vice captains. You can have six guys on the course on Sunday talking to players, getting a sense of where their head's at, helping them with strategy in the singles matches. You have more than enough guys who are vice captains who can go with one with each match during the team sessions on Friday and Saturday. And then you kind of have one spare guy to float as needed to maybe do those odd jobs where you got to go get clothes or clean clubs or move bags or handle other random logistics that you want to take off of the players' hands and just let them play golf. Ultimately, though, for all of this hand-wringing and jangling of change in the pocket, it's like a distraction. I mean, ultimately, these guys, whatever 12 guys make this team, they have to play better golf than the Europeans. And I think that the Europeans have become convinced that having a system that allows that to take shape is paramount. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think that the Europeans have a better sense of purpose, and they have a better sense of what it takes to succeed in match play. They just play it better. They do it better. They perform better. And so I think it's up to the Americans, really, and this is my true belief, to take what they do so well at the President's Cup, and now that the format has changed to more reflect the President's Cup, I think they can do this with confidence. Take that attitude of the President's Cup. Kind of blow it off a little bit. I mean, don't treat it like it's the biggest thing you've ever seen, and just go out there and play some golf and have a good time and know that you are better than your opponents. And I think if you feel that way, especially the Americans who are going to make this team, I think they're going to be extremely successful. You've got Jordan Spieth, who certainly feels like he can beat anybody at any time. You're going to have Brooks Koepka. You're going to have Justin Thomas. You're going to have some guys who have been around. You're going to have Patrick Reed. You're going to have Bubba Watson. You're going to have Ricky Fowler. You know a lot of – you're going to have Dustin Johnson. You know a lot of the guys who are going to make this team. Now, you might have some veteran presence, and you may have some young presence, depending on what happens over the course of the 2016 season. But you've got a battery of six, seven, eight guys that you know are going to make this team. It's almost certain that they're going to make the team. unless they screw it up. And even if they don't make the team on points, they're going to get named to the team because they're that important. So it kind of boils down to I think that Davis Love's point, the important one here, isn't necessarily who's the assistant captain. I think that is the message that he is sending, that we are preparing for this 10 months ahead of time, that we're not organizing all of this crap 3 weeks ahead of time, 3 months ahead of time, and then just hoping it all kind of works out. That there is a collaborative, intended effort here by all of these guys, so many of them the most important players of the last generation, to come together and say, we want to win this and we want to help these guys do it. And even if we didn't do it so well as players, we've got some insights to offer that we can start to put in front of these guys as soon as, in Love's words, as soon as they make the team, to give them options, to give them a feeling of comfort that this group, this cohort of guys that are going to be the assistant captains, playing or not, are going to do whatever it takes to help them win. It's an interesting announcement, interesting timing. No one had really any clue what that announcement was going to be this morning when the PGA of America made it clear there was going to be something going on at 3 p.m. today. I think there was some thought that maybe they would retroactively change the qualifying system and award points to guys who are playing in the events this season, this part of the season, the wraparound season, because they really aren't getting those points now, and that system was designed to help guys like Mickelson, Woods, Stricker, Furyk make the team without having to play fall series events, well, former fall series events. And you got these young guys, so many of them young guys, young Americans. You got Kazir Thomas, you've got Peter Malnati, you've got Smiley Kaufman, you've got other young players, young American players, that are doing really well right now, and they're not getting Ryder Cup points. And so I think that the question mark there was, well, are we going to try to reward these guys because it looks like we're skewing younger? And I think that Love probably thought about it, but I don't think that was within a good measure for him to do at this point in the season. So that's where they're at, and that's what they're equipped with moving forward. They've got four vice captains, a captain with a ton of experience, and they know they're going to have a young team. So this is, I believe, a help, but ultimately not as big of an announcement as built. Because in my view, and I think probably in yours, you got to play the golf to win the golf. You don't watch the golf. You don't direct the golf. You play the golf. So we'll see what happens. There are a couple other interesting things happening in the world of golf this week. There's a Race to Dubai finishing up at the DP World Championship on the European Tour. You've got the finish to the Race to the CME Globe on the LPGA Tour. So we'll get into those maybe briefly, but I do want to touch a little bit on Adam Scott and his comments again about the Olympic format, and that he intends to skip the Olympics next summer, even if he makes the team for the Australian team, because they're likely going to get two. They could get up to three or four, depending on how the year plays out, but they're likely to get two players into the Olympic tournament next year, Jason Day and somebody else. And Adam Scott is that somebody else right now. And he says he doesn't want to play. He doesn't like the format, and he doesn't think it's really valuable to have a 72-hole stroke play tournament in the 2016 Olympics as golf's representation of the sport. That is a bad representation, that it should be team-based, it should be match play, should be a four-ball. There are so many different ways to go with it. And I agree with him. I think the point is well taken, but it's also been made to death. He's been saying this for the better part of a year and a half, that he doesn't like the format, that he thinks it's dumb, that he's not waffling on playing, and sometimes he'll play and sometimes he doesn't, and whatever, fine. But at this point, beating the format question over the head is kind of rendered moot. It's going to happen. It's going to be played. It's going to be played on Gil Hanse's course. That's been settled. The land dispute is over. We've got the course, we've got the format. For however much that you hate watching 72-hole stroke play every freaking week, and then you watch it in this event, I understand that, and I understand the player's frustration, but it's happening. We've got to deal with it. So the hope here is that the 60-player tournament for men and the same format for the women will ultimately produce a compelling champion, perhaps an underdog that, in the spirit of nationalism or the Olympics or what have you, feels so compelled to get their act together, and maybe the 300 or 400th ranked person in the world in their respective game gives it a run for a gold medal. I think that's the hope. Obviously, in 72-hole stroke play, that tends not to happen. You tend to have the best players rise to the crop in that format over that length of tournament. But at this point, the complaining about the format is stupid. This is what we got. And we could change it for 2020. We could change it if the golf tournament remains a part of the Olympic program. And there's a vote on that after the 2016 Olympics. So I think that the International Olympic Committee is kind of leaning on the International Golf Federation, which represents golf in the Olympics. And the IGF folks who are made of PGA Tour people, European Tour people, R&A people, USGA people, they're saying, all right, well, our strategy is to give you a great champion, so great that you will be willing to expand golf's presence, have a team competition, and roll the dice a little bit in terms of having match play instead of stroke play. That's my hope. But if that doesn't happen, then at a certain point, you just kind of have to drop it. You didn't win. No, none of us really want that point. I don't think if you polled the players who are likely to compete in the Olympics, all 120 of them, I think most of them would tell you they don't want to play another stroke play event. And that's why so many of them are kind of like, if I make then I'll play, and if I don't, whatever. That's kind of their view, at least on the men's side. The women's side, the LPGA players could not be more tickled to be a part of the Olympic program. And I think because they see it as a big stage for the women's game, which it is, and I think it offers an opportunity for the women maybe more than the men. I don't think dramatically so, but I think a bigger one. And I think that they are embracing it as an opportunity to showcase their brand because ultimately the LPGA is the one that matters. The KLPGA and JLPGA are big things, but you're only going to have up to four Korean players and up to four Japanese players. Really, you're going to have two Japanese players, four Korean players make the team. So you want the tour that's more reflective of the worldwide stature of the game, and that's the LPGA. And so the LPGA players are like, I can't wait to try to represent my country. I can't wait to try and win a gold medal because they really get jazzed by it. The American players, and to the extent the internationals, because they always lose the President's Cup, feel beaten down trying to represent their country or continent or region or whatever because they lose all the time. And the Europeans, they win all the time. So they don't need to be validated. They're like, yeah, we always win the Ryder Cup. So what do we need a gold medal for? We're good. We're winning majors. We're winning the Ryder Cup. We got it. The U.S. is like, yeah, we lose a lot. And we lose this, and we're going to be looked down upon as like another thing the U.S. didn't win. And the internationals are like, we don't get respect anyway for our team, and we always lose the President's Cup. So why would we want to play in this international format that doesn't seem to favor us? And, you know, I get it. So I think everyone's got to put on their happy face, even if they're not necessarily thrilled to be there. Everyone has to participate. You can't have Adam Scott come in and go, well, I made the team. F you, I'm not going to play. That's a jerk move, and it hurts the sport. And I think that ultimately someone's going to speak to Scott and go, either get in line or just tank the season so that you don't make the team and some other Australian does. So very interested in that. We'll see where that leads. But I just want Adam Scott to shut up about the Olympics for a little while and go talk about his caddy who seems to think that his work is slavery and other stuff that, and don't ask him about the anchor putter. We can form a list of topics to stop asking Adam Scott about. Maybe the pressers will go better because he is cerebral and very thoughtful in his answers. So stop asking him about Steve Williams. Stop asking him about the long putter and stop asking him about the Olympic format. Move on to other questions. You'll get better answers and we'll stop seeing the same freaking headline week after week as Scott keeps getting asked about this. And I put it out on Twitter. How many times is he going to talk about this? And Michael Clayton, who is one of the hosts of a great podcast called State of the Game, which we air on GNN Radio, which is available on our website, thegolfnewsnet.com, as well as the TuneIn Radio app. On that podcast, Michael Clayton's one of the three hosts of the show with Rod Morey, who's also an Australian, and Jeff Shackelford, who you probably know or read or have seen on Golf Channel. And Michael said to me, he's going to be asked about this every week that he's in Australia. So there are three Triple Crown events that the Australian Masters, the Australian PGA, and the Australian Open. He's going to get asked in all of them about those questions. And that's so dumb. Why don't we can just move on. It's okay to move on. And I think that one kind of falls on the media a little bit to say, stop asking him the same question when you know the damn answer to it. And if you don't know the answer to it, then don't ask questions. Because if you don't have any sense of the history of these guys, what they think and where they're at, then why are you in the press room? What are you doing? Are you just there to get a camera on it for a local TV shot or what? And if that's the case, I'm happy to provide B-roll. I'm sure somebody else is, if that means smarter questions from the general populace, not frustrating these guys to hell and making them more ornery and more annoyed to deal with the general media week to week. So, you know, that's a miniature rant, but ultimately, both sides have to shut up. Stop asking dumb questions and stop maligning the Olympic format, Adam Scott. Please, my God, just do it. So we mentioned that there, the final segment, kind of final piece, topic here for this week is we've got a couple of finishes to tour seasons this week. And we've realized at this point that going into next year with the Champions Tour going to a playoff format for the Charles Schwab Cup, all five major tours have some kind of playoff format, some kind of points-based thing that gets you into something. You know, the web.com tour is really the only one that doesn't have a true points-based system, but they have a money-based system that determines your eligibility for their playoffs, which does have a system. It's money-based, but they've got a system. And so that they're all playoffs. Everything has a playoff. And I don't know that it necessarily improves the sport. And I say that it improves attention on the sport. And I say that because as a golf writer, a golf journalist, I'm at the point of the year where I'm kind of tired of talking about golf. I want to take a month off. I want to take the rest of November off, and we'll probably find a time to kind of wind down this podcast and not do it in December. We'll bring it back in January. And we want to wind down. We want to just stop talking about golf tournaments that seem tedious and pointless at this point in the year, even though they're worth a lot of money and a lot is on the line. But if you look at you guys, the downloads for the podcast are down because there's just less of a general interest in golf this time of year. And there's less traffic to our website because less people care about golf this time of year. And not just in this country, but around the world, less people care about golf this time of year. And so when we're talking about the things that we're talking about here, they're mostly falling on deaf ears. Like, okay, well, it's great. That's a nice announcement. Like six people heard about it. And then when spring comes around, they go, Tiger Woods is an assistant captain. Oh, my God, I got to get into Google and figure out why this happened and when it happened. Then that's when it'll hit these guys. So, you know, we've got these tournaments. We've got the race to the CME Globe winding up with the CME Group Tour Championship. You've got the race to Dubai ending in Dubai with the DP World Tour Championship. So you've got these dual-branded things finishing together, which makes you wonder why the Tour Championship is not the FedEx Cup Championship in Atlanta instead of the Coke branded Tour Championship, but I digress. And the only reason these tournaments matter to these players is because the money is on the line. So the LPGA, you've got a $500,000 first prize to the winner of the CME Group Tour Championship. That's unheard of in women's golf. And if you win the race to the CME Globe, you get $1 million. So Lydia Ko won the first CME Globe last year, which won $1 million, and also won the tournament. She had a $1.5 million payday. That is a ton of money on the LPGA Tour, where typically less than 15 players make $1 million in a season, at least income-wise. So a $1.5 million payday is enormous. I mean, it makes more money than 40 or 50 players on tour outright in a season. So it's a big deal, and that's why the players get behind it. And so it's going to air partly on ABC this year, which is kind of cool because the Golf Channel is a little strapped with its coverage of three big events this week. And for the LPGA, they've recognized that this is a little bit of a niche thing for the CME group who does investments. They handle a mercantile exchange, among other things. And they've limited it to Naples, Florida, where there's a community of people who obviously care about golf. You got a lot of snowbirds down there. You got a lot of retirees down there. And you've got a good community of people who are invested in the LPGA. That's going to get a good turnout. It's not necessarily going to be a well-watched event around the world, but it is a good event, and it is a good, you know, so-called sponsor activation. Meanwhile, in Dubai, you've got an $8 million tournament, and you've got a 1.875 first-place bonus that will likely go to the winner of the race to Dubai. It also could be $1.25 million, but don't worry about that. Anyway, so you've got this big bonus on the line. You've got this big tournament on the line. There aren't going to be a lot of people watching that tournament in person, maybe a few thousand each day. And certainly not a lot of people on TV, definitely in this country. But around the world, it's really not going to be that compelling week to, you know, for that week. So why do it? What's the point? Well, I think for the folks in Dubai, the folks that run the Emirate, this is kind of an expression of strength that they are a luxury destination. They have a crap ton of money from oil. They've built this enormous playground that is somewhat Western, but not quite Western, and it appeals to Europeans, it appeals to richer individuals, and it gives them a huge tax haven, by the way. But you know, that's kind of the appeal there, and they're going to put up this money with the hopes that someone watches in Dubai and goes, I'd love to go there and vacation. I'd love to go there and build a dream home if I've got seven figures or eight figures worth of money. So, you know, it might sound kind of silly why these events are taking place when no one cares about golf, and the numbers show it in terms of TV viewers, web hits, all that crap. No one cares. But they're doing it because it's an expression of something that fits their business model, something they ultimately want to achieve. And so it may not matter really whether or not these events attract lots of eyeballs, lots of fans, all that stuff. That's not the point. The point is to attract some eyeballs, very specific ones, that match what they're trying to do, match their business goals, match their government goals, I guess, in the case of Dubai. And so this is kind of bonus golf. Whether you want to watch it or not, it's going to be there. So you might as well appreciate it. We're going to get a great showdown with MB Park and Lydia Ko and Stacey Lewis, who hasn't won all year but has 6 second-place finishes and 3 third-place finishes. And in Dubai, you've got a fitting finish between Rory McIlroy, who has not finished outside the top 11 in this tournament's history and outside the top 5 since 2011, and Henrik Stenson, who's won this tournament the last 2 years and still has not managed to dominate the race to Dubai, maybe like you might expect. So two really good tournaments to end those two respective tour seasons. We get a little bit of a break, and then the European Tour kicks up again with events nobody's going to really care about in this country. But we'll talk about them here a little bit over the next couple of weeks. And we'll probably do one kind of wrap-up podcast surrounding the Australian Triple Crown. So stay tuned for those shows. We'll keep you up to date on our site, thegolfnewsnet.com, as well through my Twitter feed and Golf News Net's Twitter feed, about when we're going to wrap up the podcast for the year and when we'll kick it back off again. So that's our show for this week, and we want to say thank you so much for your support over the course of the year. It always means a lot for us when you choose to download our show and send us emails and thoughts and comments and 5-star reviews and all that stuff. It means a lot, and it's really great. We're really grateful for it. So until next week, when we review all of this season-ending stuff and whatever stuff Adam Scott chooses to say about the Olympic format again and anything else happening that's of interest in the world of golf, on next week's 19th Hole Golf Show, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.